Welcome to The Storytellers, where we share stories and music from around the world and from many cultures. I'm Natalie Harris. The Storytellers cannot be made possible without the generous contributions of KZFR members and by CORE, Community Options for Resources and Education, a personalized learning California charter school accredited by the Western Association of Schools and Colleges. CORE offers a unique blended classroom and non-classroom public education model based on the needs and interests of each individual student. Information is available on the web at coretca.org or by calling 894-3952. Before I start off the show, I would like to give a shout out to Katie. When I was checking out one of my books for tonight's show, she recognized me from the radio and she said that she loved it. So thank you so much, Katie. That means a lot. And it's so great to hear from all of you when you say that you listen to my show. It means so much. I love you all. And thank you for listening to my show every night. It's really great. So I hope you all have had a wonderful St. Patrick's Day and that it's been full of fun and that it's also been safe, too. Obviously, a lot of us associate St. Patrick's Day with the color green. I hope you wore your green today. The color gold, the leprechauns, and even Irish dancing, too, and the wonderful Irish music. That was the Beginner's Treble Jig 92 by Ellery Keane. And here is this first story. I think it's really sweet. I think you all will like it. So here is Shannon and the World's Tallest Leprechaun by Sean Callahan. Shannon loved to step dance, but she didn't think she'd look like an Irish step dancer. Other girls had fancy wigs. She curled her own hair for competitions. Other girls had expensive dresses from Ireland. Shannon's mom had made her dress. And other girls had brand new hard shoes. Shannon had an old secondhand pair with scuffs no amount of shining could cover. It was 3 days before the St. Patrick's Day step dance contest held at the Irish American Heritage Center. Shannon didn't think she'd win, but she was practicing anyway, when, with a loud, sharp crack, the heel snapped off her left shoe. Oh, no! She knew her mom and dad couldn't afford to buy her new shoes, but how could she enter the contest with a broken heel? It was hopeless. Blinking back tears, Shannon went outside to throw her shoes in the garbage. Suddenly, she remembered something her dad had told her once when she was sad. If you closed your eyes and counted backward in Gaelic, the ancient Irish language, a leprechaun might appear to grant a wish. There was nothing to lose, so Shannon closed her eyes and counted backwards. She opened her eyes. Standing before her was a bearded man wearing a shoemaker's leather apron. He looked just like she imagined a leprechaun would, except that he wasn't a wee man. "You must be 6 feet tall," she blurted. "If you must know," the man said, frowning, "I'm 5'11". I am Liam, the world's tallest leprechaun." "Are you really a leprechaun?" Shannon asked. "Yes, yes, yes," Liam said, exasperated. "I get that all the time. Are you sure you're a leprechaun? You're way too big to be a leprechaun. But let's get down to business. Because you're counting to 7 me here, I'm obliged to grant you 3 wishes, one each day for the next 3 days. Shannon thought only a moment. "I wish for a brand new step dance outfit. A wig, a beautiful dress, and shoes with heels that don't break off." "A wig? A dress?" the leprechaun scoffed. "What do those have to do with dancing? But a shoe, you do need that. Give me your broken one. I'll show you how to take care of the perfectly fine stuff you already have." He took the shoe, pulled a hammer and nails from his apron, and drove a nail through the heel and into the sole. "Now you try," he said. Shannon pounded in another nail. "Good as new. Even better," the leprechaun said. "That's your first wish." Before Shannon could protest that having her shoe repaired wasn't her wish at all, Liam had vanished. At dinner, Shannon was very quiet. Her mother asked her what was wrong. "What do leprechauns look like?" Shannon asked. Her dad laughed. "Well," he said, "they're usually drawn with beards." "They're also pretty small," her mom added, "maybe a foot high." "So how could that tall person be a leprechaun?" Shannon wondered. After school the next day, Shannon rushed to the backyard. Would the leprechaun return? She was about to come back with Gaelic when there he was, wagging his finger in her face. "No need to count again," he said grumpily. "I'm a leprechaun who does what he says will do. Let's have that second wish, lass." Shannon was ready. "I wish I were a great Irish step dancer," she said. "Did you know the best way to get better at something is to teach someone else how to do it?" demanded Liam. "This afternoon, you'll be showing me how to dance." Now Shannon was grumpy. "Don't you ever just grant wishes? Does everyone have to work so hard?" "I'm no fairy godmother," Liam said. "I grant wishes in a proper manner." "Are you really a leprechaun? You sure don't look like one." "I know I'm very tall," he said, "but I'm the best leprechaun that ever was. How I look doesn't matter. How I grant wishes does. Now, show me how to dance." So on the patio in the cool March air, Shannon started the leprechaun's dance lesson. She showed him how to hold his arms at his sides and keep his head high and his back straight. Then she demonstrated a simple treble jig. Floor, knee, hop, back, 2, 3, 4, she called. At first, Liam danced like a rag doll, his limbs going every which way. But after a long, grueling practice, they were dancing together in perfect time. You know, I think that's the best I've ever danced, Shannon said, out of breath. What did I tell you about teaching, lass? The leprechaun said. It's great practice. Shannon closed her eyes and wiped some sweat from her face. When she opened her eyes again, Liam was gone. Shannon ran into the house. If you met a leprechaun, what would you wish for? She asked her dad. Gold, of course, her father said. Leprechauns are supposed to hide a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Why all the questions about leprechauns? Oh, you know, St. Patrick's Day and all, Shannon said at last. The next day, Liam again appeared in the backyard. Right away, Shannon asked, Do you have a pot of gold buried at the end of the rainbow? Aye, it's true, Liam said. Did you Google me or something? It is within the rules for me to wish for some of your gold. Tis, and if you practice some more, tomorrow on St. Patrick's Day you will have some, he said, grinning. Again, the leprechaun and Shannon danced together. When Liam disappeared, for the first time ever, Shannon felt she could win. It was drizzling on St. Patrick's Day as Shannon walked confidently to the Irish-American Heritage Center. But when she saw Bridget in her fine curly wig, Colleen in her fancy dress, and Meg in her new hard shoes, Shannon began to lose heart. She just didn't look like a step dancer. It was her turn to dance. She went on stage with only her own curls, wearing her homemade dress and scuffed up hard shoes. Now it was raining even harder. Oh, what was the point? She looked out at the crowd. There were her mom and her dad, smiling at her. She gave them a little smile back. Then she saw the leprechaun. His silly hat towered over the crowd, and he winked at her. Shannon took a deep breath. If Liam could grant wishes looking nothing like a leprechaun, maybe she could dance in her old shoes. When the violinist started to play, Shannon thought only about dancing. Her curls bounced, her dress swirled, and her shoes thumped. She danced the most beautiful treble jig she had ever danced. When Shannon won first prize, she caught sight of a rainbow arching across the sky. It seemed to point right to the shiny metal hanging around her neck. So this was the leprechaun's gold. She looked for Liam in the crowd. He had vanished once more, but she could have sworn she heard him whisper in her ear, Happy St. Patrick's Day, Shannon. The end. Isn't that a sweet story? I told you you would love it. And Irish, so Shannon is an Irish dancer, and some of my friends are too, Mariah and Molly, and they actually danced downtown at the Plaza earlier today. The local Irish dance group, the Oliver Academy of Irish Dancing, they had a performance from 11:45 to 12:30 at the downtown Plaza. So I went to that, and it was so great. They do soft shoe ones, which is kind of, it's more softer, I guess, because it's more flowing. And then they do a hard shoe, and that one is really cool because they have these boards out, and it makes this really cool sound because it's the stomping of feet on the wood. It's really cool. You have to be there to see it. So I definitely recommend checking out some of the other events because it's spectacular. I tried doing Irish dance once, and that didn't go so well. There's this Celtic fair, which is kind of like the Irish during the Renaissance times. They hold it every year in Grass Valley, and so they had an Irish dance class there, and me and Mariah took, and of course Mariah is really good at Irish dance, but I've never done it before, and it is so hard. It's hard to kick your feet up so high and keep your arms at your side because you want to flail them all about. But it's really fun, and if you want to try it, go for it, because it's really cool. So Ireland is also known for their music, too. And this is a really cute story. This one is called The Traveling Men of Ballycoo by Eve Bunting. Cathelcine and Jimmy O'Malley were the traveling men, and there were those who said they were maybe the greatest traveling men that Ireland had ever seen. They had no place that they called home, though Simy Rooney had left them a cottage in Ballycoo when he passed on. No matter, the whole length of the land was theirs, for they were the traveling men, taking their songs and music with them wherever they'd go. Cathal played the penny whistle. He had a tune called The Hunt, and in it you could hear plain as day the high, wild keen of the hunting horn, and the gallop of horses and the bark of the dogs as they lit out after the hare. There'd be the sounds of hounds yelping and slavering, and in the end the terrible squeal of the murdered hare, real enough and true enough to chill the blood in your body. There were many a man heard Cathal play and hung up his boots to hunt no more. Seam played the fiddle, bent near in two over the top of himself, every bit of him jigging to his music. He fiddled so mildly that the rosin he rubbed on his bow rose and hung like a mist around his head. Young Jimmy played the melody. He had a tune, a march it was, and you could have sworn a whole bridge of pipers was tramping over the nearest hill, three abreast, their kilts blowing around their bare red knees. All that came out of a box thing no bigger than a penny loaf. None of the three was for marriage. Didn't they have all they needed in each other, with their music to share and a royal welcome wherever they went? Cathal always had the right word for everything. "It's the greatest life we have," he said. "We're taking joy and spreading it from place to place, and leaving it behind us when we go. What more can a man ask?" "Nothing," Sing said. "Nothing," young Jimmy agreed. Mimi was too great to last forever. It seemed to the traveling men afterward that the years had gone by without their noticing them. Sing was the first to take bed with the pains in his back. Cathal and young Jimmy got a fine gray donkey by the name of Mrs. Murphy to carry him. She had eyes big and shiny as two lick stones, and a back as wide as the valleys between the Mourne Mountains. When Cathal got the aches in his two legs, Mrs. Murphy was fit enough to hold both of them, and seen, and young Jimmy helped them on and off her back. The people were still glad to see the traveling men. Weren't they the same good boys they'd always been? And wasn't their music as fine as ever? They'd be invited in and given mugs of tea. Mrs. Murphy had a corner to herself, and there was always a blanket for Cathal's legs, and another for Sing's back, and a jar of homemade liniment for them to take along with when the music was done for the day and the traveling men moved on. But it was getting harder for them to move on. It was getting harder for them to move. "There's nothing for it but to settle down," Cathal said. "We'll stop traveling and live in one place, same as everyone else. We're not that young anymore." Which was true. Even young Jimmy was close to 70, and he'd lost half of his good, strong teeth. "It's called and making the best of a bad job," Cathal said. Cathal always had the right word for everything. So they went to Ballycoo. Simon Rooney's cottage was tight and dry. They settled into it like old birds into a warm nest. In time, they got for themselves a big, soft dog that they called Red Rory, and a cow called Maggie, and it was surprising how good everything was. But the evenings were the best. Sing would take out his fiddle and rosin up his bow. Cathal would blow a tender breath into his penny whistle, and Jimmy's bent fingers would dance across his melody. The notes flew around their heads like quick white moss, taking away every ache. The fire sparked up the chimney, and Red Rory slept in its warmth. They'd play Long Slender Sally and the Dark Woman of the Glen, and sometimes Red Rory would beat his whiskery tail on the floor and smile in his sleep while the slow, sweet dusk came settling into night. There were good times, to be sure, but there was something waiting. It was Cathal who put the word to it. "It's right and fine us playing for ourselves and getting the good of it, but we're used to sharing the music we make, and it's not ever as sweet when it's kept to ourselves." They thought about it, but it was young Jimmy who had the idea to hang the paper on the door. It said, "Music Nightly, come and be welcome." "We'll wait now and see what transpires," Cathal said. They didn't have long to wait. That very night there came a knock on the door. There were three children outside. "We heard you playing and we read your notice. Can we come in a wee while and we'll listen?" "Indeed, and we're glad to have you," Sing told them, and that was that. Soon the word got out that the greatest traveling men that ever were had come to rest in Ballycoo, and there was never a night without music and friends to savor it. "It's better now, isn't it?" young Jimmy asked Cathal. "Aye, now it's complete," Cathal said. Sometimes they pushed the settle and stools against the walls, and there'd be stepping to Big John's reel. Sometimes there'd be music just for the listening, bringing fairies into the wee warm room, or storms at sea with waves so fierce you were afraid of drowning. Sometimes you'd be in a forest with the birds singing their shining songs, or you'd be in India, the snake charmer piping his snake like a rope from its curly basket. One night, when their visitors had gone, the traveling men lay side by side in their three feather beds. Rain beat on the outside thatch, and the room was warm with the smell of liniment. "Since we travel no more, we can't very well be called the traveling men now, can we, Cathal?" Jimmy asked sleepily. "What should be the name for us now?" Cathal scratched at his beard. "Don't we go places every night of our lives? And don't we take all here along with us? Traveling men we were, and are still, and always will be." Young Jimmy smiled and closed his eyes. Cathal always had the right word for everything. The end. Isn't that sweet? And Irish music, some of the songs I definitely want to dance along to. So don't be afraid to dance along to this song, Mountain Dew by the Clancy Brothers.
Hey, diddly day, dum, diddly doo, 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 day, diddly day, day. Let grasses grow and waters flow in a free and easy way. But give me enough of the fine old stuff that's made near Galway Bay. And policemen all from Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim too. We'll give them the slip and we'll take a sip of the real old Mountain Dew. Hey, diddly day, diddly do, diddly day, diddly do, diddly day, day. Hey, diddly day, diddly do, diddly day, diddly do, diddly day, day. At the foot of the hill there's a neat little still where the smoke curls up to the sky. By the smoke and the smell you can plainly tell that there's Fujian brewing nearby. It fills the air with odor rare and betwixt both me and you. When home you stroll you can take a bowl or a bucket of the Mountain Dew. Hey, diddly-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-ray, diddly-day-day. Hey, diddly-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-ray, diddly-day-day. Now learned men who use the pen have wrote your praises high. The sweet poutine from Ireland green, distilled from wheat and rye. Throw away your bills, it'll cure all ills, a pagan, a Christian, a Jew. Tear off your coat and graze your throat with a real old Mountain Dew. Hey, diddly-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-diddly-dum, diddly-doo-ray, diddly-day-day.
Welcome back to The Storytellers. I'm Natalie Harris. So we are doing an Irish theme tonight because it is St. Patrick's Day. So leprechauns are definitely a huge portion of it. You see it on t-shirts and signs and pretty much everywhere during St. Patrick's Day. And so this story has to do with those tricky leprechauns, but they can also help you out at times too. Here is Tim O'Toole and the Wee Folk by Gerald McDermott. In a little cottage on a little hill, at the end of a little lane in Donegal, lived Tim O'Toole and his wife, Kathleen. Tim and Kate were so poor they had not a penny or potato between them. The children ate porridge for supper, even the mice were thin from want of food, and the cat wouldn't bother with chasing the creatures. Their neighbors, who were poor enough themselves, avoided Tim, for they thought he would bring them bad luck. Things went from bad to worse until one day there was not a crumb or a drop left in the house. "Tim O'Toole," said Kate, "I can stand no more being poor, and you sitting around bemoaning your fate. You must go out to find work like a decent man and take us out of this poverty." Kathleen kept after him, and next morning Tim set out to see if he could earn some wages. Tim O'Toole traveled the length of the country, knocking on every door and crying at every farm, trying to eke out a few coppers for a day's work. But there was no work to be had. Finally, when Tim was tired and hungry and could walk no further, he stopped and lay down to rest in the cool green clover at the side of the road. No sooner had he stretched out there than he heard the faint sound of merry piping and littling voices raised in song and laughter. The strange music was coming from a little hollow in the side of the hill. Tim crept up to the hollow and peered over the edge. There below him was a troop of the wee folk, laughing and singing and carrying on. Well, Tim knew for sure his luck had changed, for it is well known that whoever spies the wee folk in the light of day can demand their treasure. Suddenly, the music stopped. The little merrymakers were astonished when they looked up and saw Tim peering down at them. "Hand over your gold," bellowed Tim, trying to be fierce, "and you'll come to no harm." "Have mercy on us, Tim O'Toole," begged the leader of the little people. There was a smile on his lips and he tried not to laugh. "You've caught us for fair, so we'll see that you're richly rewarded." Then there was hurrying and scurrying in the hollow below, and soon the wee folk handed up a little gray goose. "Here you are, Tim, a goose that lays golden eggs. Go home straight away till not a soul, and you and your Kate shall never want for more." Tim started for home, carrying the goose and feeling very pleased with himself. Soon darkness overcame him, and he stopped at a farmhouse to ask if he could stay the night. The couple who owned the farm, the Bagoons, let him in and sat him down by the fire. Tim began to boast of his great good fortune and the little gray goose that lays golden eggs. That night, while Tim was asleep in the loft, the Magoons decided they could use just such a goose as this. Quietly, they exchanged it for their own. Tim was none the wiser for it, and in the morning went happily homeward, carrying the goose he thought would bring him great wealth. When he got home, he put the bird upon the table. "Is this all you've got to show for being gone these 3 days?" asked Kathleen. "But, darling, this is no ordinary goose," said Tim. "This one lays golden eggs." Well, the short of it is, they waited a long, long time, and as you might guess, the goose did no such thing. "They've cheated me," howled Tim, and he marched off in a terrible temper to give the little people what for. When he finally reached their hiding place, he was still angry. "Golden eggs, is it?" cried Tim to the wee folk. "That goose you gave me laid no eggs at all." "This is curious indeed," said their startled leader. Then the little man wrinkled his nose and gave a sly smile. Tim, wait but a moment and we'll make good your reward. There was hurrying and scurrying in the hollow below. A moment later, the wee folk brought forth a fine linen tablecloth and spread it in front of Tim. In the wink of an eye, it was covered with bounteous food and drinks, the likes of which he had never seen before. Take this tablecloth home straight away, Tim O'Toole, and tell not a soul, cautioned the leader of the little ones. Then you and your darling Kate shall never want for more. Tim walked merrily toward home until darkness came on him. Again he stayed the night with the McGoons and boasted to them of his newfound fortune. The McGoons thought it good fortune indeed. When Tim slept, they slipped away the magic tablecloth and exchanged it for an ordinary one from their very own cupboard. Tim was none the wiser for it when he reached home the next day. Kathleen, my darling, he said, will never go hungry again. With a flourish, she spread the cloth upon the table. Well, of course it was empty and produced not a drop nor a crumb. Kathleen laughed. Tim went into a rage. The little heathens, he shouted. In a flash, Tim was out the door and on the road again. Stand fast, Tim called down into the little hollow where the wee folk were gathered. "'Tis pleased you are not, Tim O'Toole, said the leader. Could it be that the tablecloth was empty? All the wee folk were grinning. Indeed it was, you scoundrel, answered Tim. The wee ones began to chuckle. And did you go direct home as we told you? Tim O'Toole admitted that he had twice stayed the night at the McGoons. When they heard this, the little people burst into laughter. You were a fool to trust the likes of the McGoons, said the leader. But never mind, Tim, we've just the thing for you. The little people brought up a strange green hat and gave it to Tim. They instructed him to boast of its magic to the McGoons and to leave the hat where they could find it. Then we'll see what we shall see, said the wee one. A third time, Tim tarried at the McGoons. He proudly displayed the magic hat the wee folk had given him. Then he crawled up into the loft and pretended to sleep. He had but laid his head upon the straw when he heard the McGoon stir below. I wonder what sort of magic it is, said McGoon to his wife. Cautiously, he tipped over the hat. Out of the hat jumped 10 tiny men, each a little blackthorn club, and began to beat the McGoons about the shins and ankles. The couple whooped and hollered and danced around the room, trying to escape the blows of the wee folk. Lay off, lay off, begged McGoon. Tell your henchmen to have mercy, O'Toole. Give me my linen tablecloth and my little gray goose, and I'll leave you in peace, said Tim, laughing all the while. The McGoons gave back what they had taken. Tim put on his hat, tucked the little gray goose under one arm, draped the tablecloth over the other arm, and headed for home. When Tim arrived, he spread the tablecloth before Kathleen and set down the goose in the middle of it. The bird honked and laid a golden egg. Then the most delectable eatables and drinkables began magically to appear on the table. Kathleen, my darling, said Tim, we are happy at last. Or so Tim thought. Folks from all parts soon heard of the O'Toole's good fortune and crowded in to see the wondrous goose. The little cottage filled up with neighbors until there was no place left to sit or stand. Everyone helped themselves to the never-ending supply of eatables and drinkables. I never knew we had so many friends, said Tim, but I think 'tis time the party was at an end. Tim tipped his hat and out jumped the 10 tiny men with blackthorn clubs. They beat the shins and ankles of the noisy crowd, chased them out the door, and pushed them down the hill. After that, the cottage was quiet once again. Tim O'Toole and his family were quite comfortable, you might say. They spent many hours in front of the hearth, sipping hot tea and chatting, and thinking kind thoughts of the wee folk. For all I know, Tim and Kate are there still, in a little cottage on a little hill, at the end of a little lane in Donegal. The end. Isn't that a great story? I love it so much. And I really hope you enjoyed tonight's show and that you enjoyed the stories and the music that I played. The Storytellers cannot be made possible without the generous contributions of KZ Farm members and by Floral Native Nursery and Restoration, where the wild things grow. A California native nursery committed to the use of sustainable native plants for landscaping and restoration projects. For information about native plants and drought-tolerant landscape design, visit Floral Native Nursery at Restoration at 2511 Floral Avenue or call 892-2511 online at floralnativenursery.com. And make sure to stay tuned for LA Sounds with Senor Felipe. I really hope you enjoyed tonight's show and that you had a great, happy, and safe St. Patrick's Day. And if a leprechaun visited your home, even though he probably played some tricks, I hope he left you something good as well. I had green milk this morning, and that was quite good. I would definitely recommend, if you're into Irish dancing, check it out, or even do classes too. And then also the Celtic Fair that happens every year, that's also a lot of fun. So there's a lot of cool things to do if you have an Irish heritage or you just love the Irish culture, which is really cool. Here is an Irish blessing for all my listeners tonight. Thank you for listening. May the Irish hills caress you. May her lakes and rivers bless you. May the luck of the Irish enfold you. May the blessings of St. Patrick behold you. This next song is also a very sweet song. I really like it. I think it has a really sweet meaning behind it, and I think you all really like it. Thank you again. I'll see you next time.
There's a tear in your eye, and I'm wondering why, for it never should be there at all. With such power in your smile, sure a stone you'd beguile, so there's never a teardrop should fall. When your sweet lilting laughter's like some fairy song, and your eyes twinkle bright as can be, you should laugh all the while, and all other times smile, and now smile a smile for me. When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. Sure they'd steal your heart away. For your smile is a part of the love in your heart, and it makes even sunshine more bright. Like the linnet's sweet song, crooning all the day long, comes your laughter so tender. For the springtime of life is the sweetest of all. There is never a real care or regret. And while springtime is ours, throughout all of youth's hours, let us smile each chance we get. When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they'd steal.
Dum up, 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 d